Right, so we have approaching the pointy end, as it were, of the end of our series this month on relationships. We've so far looked at some foundations of of some of the most important central themes, which are of submission, of working together within the family. And we're going to talk today a little bit about how that works out in the workplace and in the community at large. We had that reading there briefly from Dave, which is a parallel passage to the part in Ephesians where we've mostly been working from during the course of this month. I'll come back to the Ephesians reading in a moment, but we're just going to share a few thoughts on what it's like to work. It's been a few years now since Roy Orbison, I think it was, sang Working for the Man. I think Bob Dylan told us that sooner or later we're going to have to serve somebody. So most of us during our time in our life, we will have to work in a job. So I look around and there's a fair few folks here that have retired, that have been there and done that, as it were, in the working world. But most of you, I'm sure, have either at some stage been an employee or an employer or worked for yourself. You've done something, some kind of labour, which has required you to interact with others in order to make a living, pay the bills, roof over your head, food on the table and all those things. So who's had a job or been an employer? Good. Okay, at least most of you will know, at least from past experience, what I'm talking about. I'm going to share some reflections on the reading about how we slaves and masters, but that also has within it a number of principles about how we interact with other people in how we serve and work with the rest of the community at large. I used to have a boss who, for want of a better expression, was a bit of a boss from hell. He was a guy who was uncompromising, harsh with failure. He would take back various instructions. He'd say, do something, and then he'll end up doing it himself. And it was incredibly frustrating. Working in a working situation where there wasn't a clear relationship of communication, where there wasn't accountability, there was uncertainty. Wouldn't you rather be in a working situation, in any kind of relationship, where the communication is clear, where everybody knows what is expected of each other? Not always the case, however. We so often work in environments, in workplaces where there are challenges to the way we communicate with each other, with even the standards to which we are expected to live and work, and with our values. Again, I've worked this, I don't know, most of you probably realise this. My role here in this church is the first time I've actually worked full time in Christian service. All my working life, because I'm not that old, up until 2.5 years ago, I'm 44 now, by the way, so all that time, I've worked in what we in the church like to call secular work. It's working in normal day-to-day environment rather than in a situation where I get the opportunity to invest myself in people like you. So I've worked in areas where there is tradesmen, there is people who have different values, different language choices than which we might prefer to have, different expectations, different morals. And I can't tell you the number of times where in my working environment, working with tradesmen, working with bosses who don't share the same Christian values that I do, where I've been challenged to do things that are not entirely perfectly ethical, legal, moral. The number of times customers would ask me for a receipt for something made out to for some product that wasn't what they actually bought, but because if I'd written it out for this thing, they could claim it as a tax deduction. Kind of a simple answer. Sorry, no, that's not truthful. And as a Christian, my ethics require me to speak and act consistently. Hard to do. Some of the other challenges that we encounter are a little bit more subtle, a bit more complicated than that. But I just want to encourage you that there are many ways that we will encounter those challenges. But in every opportunity, every challenge, God can work in us. God can use these moments in our working environment, in our interaction with others, as an opportunity to show what kind of servant Jesus is. I love the fact that Colin, in communion today, talked about how Jesus, he used the word servant, and I'm going to talk a whole lot more about that this morning, about what it means to serve, what it means to work, because most people work 8+ hours a day in their job, plus they also interact with neighbours, with sport, with community groups, whatever it might be. So I'm going to talk not only about how we relate within our church, but how we connect with the outside world. And in most of those situations, there is one person serving or helping another. Really, and so I want to share a few thoughts how we serve and how we receive service from others. Now, work, unfortunately, is hard. God's original intention was actually that work, the production and drawing the fruit from the crops and the produce that Adam and Eve and their family were to have, it was meant to be joyful and good. However, things changed. You go back and you look in Genesis 3 and God pronounced a curse upon mankind. He said that from your sweat, I'll read it for you, it says basically that we're going to have to sweat and work hard to produce what we want, and it's not going to be so easy, unfortunately. He says, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree, which I commanded you not to eat, cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food, until you return to the ground from which you were taken. Bad news then is that the way we labour, the way we have to produce and feed ourselves, comes hard, comes difficult, and there are many challenges to that situation. So I'm going to read the parallel passage. We heard that, but from the Dave read us there. I'm just going to get you to go back into Ephesians now. If you would be kind enough to go back to Ephesians 6. We're going to go through verses 5 to 9. That's the continuation of the readings we've had so far, where we've talked about husbands and wives submit to each other, and about children to submit to their parents, and their parents should not exasperate their kids. We're going with this household code that Paul's presenting, where about how slaves and masters, some Bible translations have the heading there, slaves and masters. Some translations, by the way, use the word servant rather than slave, and I'm going to look at a few different meanings for that idea of servant in a moment, but I'll read this the shorter passage here in Ephesians for you. It says, slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and with sincerity of heart, just as you should obey Christ. Obey them not only to win their favour when their eye is on you, but like the slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not men, because you know that the Lord will reward everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is slave or free. And masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favouritism with him. So while we don't really have slavery the way that it was back then, although sometimes it might feel a bit that way, we still have to work, and rather than choosing, we have to do it out of obligation rather than choosing. Now, so where it says servant or slave there, there's actually in the New Testament, the word servant can come from a number of different words. I'm going to just look a little bit of the background there. Just skip ahead here we go. There's a number of different words there, and I'm just going to show off a little bit to talk about some of the different Greek words which we translate as servant, just to give a bit of a context as to what sort of people Paul is actually addressing here. Now, the first one, which is actually used here, is the word doulos. And basically, that summarises the person that I have to work. I am obligated. I have maybe fallen into some kind of a debt. My needs are greater than what my own piece of land that can produce, so I will agree to serve another person, subjugate my will to them, work in their home for whatever period of time so that I get paid and I have to do only their will. It's the sort of person that says, I have to work. And so we would use the word slave in the classic sense like that, a person who is under the control and obligation of a master. Sounds like anybody with a mortgage, doesn't it? Another word that is used is diakonos, which is the person who willingly serves, the person who might say, I want to serve, I want to give, I want to input here and give my labour out of a choice of giving. It's that sort of an action. And that's where we get the word deacon from, which we commonly use in churches to describe those who serve in an active role. We have a board, sometimes called deacons. These are the people who willingly put up their hand and say, I want to give something here. I have something to offer and I want to serve. That's the word diakonos, the sort of person that does that. Then we have the word apace, which is like a junior. It's more a word that refers to a child in a household. And that person who says, I'm helping. Like a child who says, I can get involved here, do a little bit. I'm not in charge of anything, but I'm an assistant that comes along and helps. And a specific form of that is oiketes, which is a sort of a domestic helper, a person who comes in, maybe the household cleaner would be that kind of person who would help in that way. A hupretes is a person who's like I serve by representing. I am the servant of Well, in some sense, we are all servants of Jesus in the sense that we represent him to the rest of the world. But it's like an emissary, a person who serves by passing on a message, by interceding on someone else's behalf. That's another way that we might use the word servant. We have the word therapon. We serve by someone who serves by healing, by bringing restoration. We get the word therapist from that word, but that's another Greek word for one who serves in a specific capacity. And then that other one there, sundoulos, which is obviously derived from doulos. And it's the sort of person that works alongside. It's a co-worker. It's an assistant. It is, we're doing the same thing. You might use that as a workmate, a colleague in your work. But specifically in this case, Paul is talking about servants, those who have to work. Now, we don't have to imagine like the collars around the neck and the chains and the sort of, I'm not allowed to go anywhere. The servants who are doing the master's work are the ones who are employed, and while they're in their employment, they must do what they're told in much the same way as an employer does today. Now, it's not a harsh treatment, but it's a very similar thing in the sense of when you're on the job, this sort of particular servant, this is what I do. I don't get to go and check on my own field in the backyard of my house. I don't get to do too much of my own thing. I have to wholeheartedly, with every sense, everything I'm doing, serve and do my boss's will. So it's very much a slave in that sense of, well, that's what they must do. Now, slavery is one of those subjects that the Bible makes very little comment on. The American Civil War was fought largely over slavery, and both sides of that argument claimed to have a Christian perspective, that slavery is endorsed, or that emancipation was spoken of, that Jesus brought a message of freedom for the slaves. The point simply being, the Bible observes this, that in the Old Testament there are a number of regulations about how slaves are to be treated, and it was all about fair treatment. There's clear instruction about the treatment of slaves. Deuteronomy 24 comments about how slaves, those who have given themselves over to work for others because they need to be paid, they should not be taken advantage of. They should be paid a fair wage. They should be paid on time. There are regulations that they should work no more than 10 hours a day, never at night time, never on the Sabbath. And if a Jewish slave was wounded or mistreated, he should be freed right away. Some people who kept slaves as servants, as employees, did better, treated them more kindly than the minimum that the law required. Just as today we find there are some employers who are more generous, more kind, who give pay rises and bonuses for simply because they want to inspire and bless their staff. There were some times when a servant would do over and above the law. Boaz in Ruth is an example of that. He treated his servants and his staff joyfully and happily, and they greeted him with the same degree of welcome when he came to meet them. Actually, I won't read that bit. But a servant could choose if they loved their master, if they felt they were being treated particularly well, a servant could actually choose to stay on forever. There's opportunity and regulation for that. It's back in Exodus 21, and it goes a little bit like this. And you don't have to come back, I'll just read it to you. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he's to serve you for 6 years, but in the seventh year he shall go free without paying anything. If he comes alone, he's to go free alone. If he has a wife when he comes, she's to go with him. If his master gives him a wife and she bears him sons or daughters, the woman and her children shall belong to the master, and only the man shall go free. But if the servant declares, I love my master and my wife and children and do not want to go free, then his master must take him before the judges. He shall take him to the door of the doorpost and pierce his ear with an awl, which is a big spike, right? Not a pleasant moment to have your ear pierced by an awl. It's not like you go and get an ear pierced or a tattoo. This is pretty major marking on a person to show they have given their will over to serving another person. He shall take him to the door, pierce his ear with an awl, then he will be his servant for life. So a servant, while they might be forced into labour in order to pay the bills, to feed the family, they could also, if they find conditions are good, I will willingly serve. I will willingly give myself to serve this master for the rest of my life because he treats me pretty well. And I've actually come to find my place here and enjoy what I do. Most Jews and Gentiles, a slave was just property. They were treated as a commodity that could be bought and sold at the market. They were, as some Romans used to make the comment, oh, it's just a tool endowed with the property of speech. A tool endowed with speech is all that they would consider a slave to be. Today, as I say, there's a difference that most of us are in a position similar to what a slave would have been back then. And some of those are to do with the economy. In a rural setting, most people would have their own little plot of land and they could barter for themselves out of their own produce. They could actually, with their own efforts, produce enough to feed their family or exchange that with other people. Today, we're not in a rural society. We're in a much more urban sort of an environment. We don't have the wherewithal to produce the food and stuff necessary to feed our own families. So it becomes necessary for us to work, to have somebody else tell us what to do. They give us this little unit of exchange called money. We go then and use that to swap that for the other goods and services that we need to provide for our family. So the rationale for serving slavery is by and large for us today an economical reality, which puts us into the category, most of us, of the slaves that Paul writes about there. We, unfortunately, due to economy, we are slaves to the economy. But don't be too sad about that. Actually, most of you guys, as I said, being retired, you're broken free from that. But for those who are working, those who choose to serve, who feel like they have an obligation to serve, here are some useful guidelines and thoughts that we can make use of here. A few comments on the reading. But when Paul writes there about how we should serve with sincerity of heart, he's talking about doing it so single-mindedly and without any duplicity. The phrase there is single mind, literally that we do so. And when we're on the job, when we serve, it is not knowingly acting against the interests of the boss. And the reminder that when we're on the boss's time, when someone else is paying for our time, we are required to focus on that particular task at hand. He uses the phrase, obey your master just as you would obey Christ, just as if the real Lord and Master of your life were the one that you are serving. Any of you see that show, Undercover Boss? Bit of a murmur, yes, no, maybe. The premise of it all is, of course, that a CEO or the manager or the owner of some reasonably sized business decides they're going to check on how their staff are going. Get a real close-up view to find out, are their customer service people doing the right job? Are the guys in the background working hard and concentrating? Do my staff really love what they do? Is there anything in which way I can improve their lot as an employee? So we have the situation where employers will dress up, they will change their appearance, put on glasses, a fake beard, or get rid of a beard, whatever the case may be, and go incognito, as it were, in amongst their staff, and find out what life is really like. In a very real way, for us, the undercover boss is right here with us, in the most positive, encouraging, loving, supervising way. You notice on undercover boss, never ever do they fire any employee for slacking off or discipline them. The intention is so the bosses can catch the employees out, catch them out doing the good things. The number of times, and I don't watch it often, but the few times I have, the number of times where the boss reveals who he really is and he offers some bonus, some benefit for the person who has been working hard, not thinking that anybody knows, and the joy that they receive when this boss says, I realise that you are working hard. I see your need and I want to give you a little extra. Just imagine what that might be like if in your act of service, if tomorrow Jesus were to come along and say, I've spotted how you have been so faithful, even when nobody's watching. I see the things you do in secret and in private that help, that nobody else knows about. And Jesus can say, well done, good and faithful servant. What a great thought that is. But just as we would obey Christ, we obey in our workplace and in the places we serve because he is watching. He is looking for opportunities to encourage you and reward you for doing well. We do this not only to, not only when the eye is on you to win the favour of the, but not only to win the favour when the eye is on you. The phrase there is eye service. The real meaning is to look like you're working hard. We work, not only to make it look like we're doing the right thing, but to actually do the right thing. It is hard to hard to explain just the depth of how important that is, to not simply look like we're working hard, but to actually do the right thing. God loves to see us doing the things that are true, the things that that no one else sees. In Matthew 6:1, Jesus said that if you do good things only for the sake of having other people to recognize your good deeds, you've had your reward. If you do stuff only to look like you're doing the right thing, well, then you're going to look like you get a reward, but you don't actually. He sees those which are unseen. Our task is to please the real boss, the real master, which is to please Jesus, and to listen carefully to the way he says that we should please others. Now, there's an old saying that the customer comes first in the workplace. You ever heard that one? Customers first. Okay? And it's not true, by the way. Right? Boss first. Now, I've had a number of occasions in my working life, only a very, very few, where I have actually had to, not physically, I have actually had to eject customers from my shop. I've had to tell people, we're not going to do business with you. Because I'm under the boss's instructions and he does not want to do business with that person. That person has gone against my employer's desires, so I've had to please him by displeasing this guy. All right, so, and in the same way as we serve Jesus, as we serve God, by serving and blessing others. We can't actually directly serve God except to how we serve each other. In the workplace, in the community, in the church, how we relate, remember that we are doing that because this is what God wants us to do. We honour God, we please God mostly by how we interact with each other, how we represent him in the workplace, in the world, in the community out there. Paul also makes a comment here. He says, masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Before that, he says, you know the Lord will reward everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is slave or free. Whether you're an employer, whether you're an employee, whether you are in charge of people or whether you serve, God sees you equally and rewards the good that you do on the very same basis. So the opportunity is there for us in our roles as we interact with other people, either as a servant in a community group, as an employee. We have the opportunity in those roles to model how Jesus is a servant. I found a number of ways in my working career where I had the opportunity to respond in a way that is like Christ, that represents him, but in a way that's maybe not quite so good. But it's a great opportunity to model what sort of servant Jesus is by the way that we serve. I've got a friend, she is a high-level customer service representative and trainer for a company that does medical health insurance, for a health insurer. And she is highly, highly respected for her energy, for her consistency, for her bright personality, and for her follow-through as a great representative of not only of her employer, but of Christ. In her workplace, people look at her and go, wow, you have just got something really special, the way that you relate to people, how you teach and train, you are so patient, you are so pleasant to be around. How do you do it? Now, do you think she says, well, I'm just that good? No. She constantly says, well, God's working in me to make me this person that can do this stuff. She, whatever possible opportunity comes up, when someone comments how effective and how good she is in her job, she constantly says, God's changing me, making me this way. Do you really think I can do this on my own? No, there's great opportunities. And to be a good representative person in the workplace or in any other club. How many of you are involved in some other organisation? It may not be work, but in some organisation, it might be a residents association, it might be a sporting club, it might be any other group of people with which you interact, and you do something to serve, great. That's a way where you can be a little representative of Jesus by serving with humility, by recognising him as the one that gives you the grace and the courage to serve in the way that you do. As a leader, as a boss, employer, whatever those words might be for you, again, most of us has opportunities to be in a leadership role. As a leader, opportunity is there to model what kind of Lord Jesus is. As one who not only does not command, expect harsh punishment for when they go wrong and unflinching in their standards, but as a Lord, Jesus is loving, and kind, and patient, communicates well what he expects of us. And as a leader, that is our opportunity to represent Jesus in those ways. When we interact with the rest of the world, if we're leading others, we do it in a way that reflects how Jesus leads. Not harshly, not strongly, not uncompromisingly. And when you get a bad example of that, it can do a lot of damage. I worked with a guy who's a Christian, as a boss, but I found him... I'm not actually going to say it, because for a moment, that's being... I was going to talk about an example of someone else, but that's actually not fair on him, because he's not here to answer that. Point simply being, you have the opportunity to be a good representative. I encourage you to use that. So we've got to ask the question, are we being self-controlled in sport? Are we being wise in our advice when we give advice to others in organisation groups? Are we gracious in our victory? Do we choose to serve in ways that are above and beyond what we are expected to do? Are we seen by others as loving and generous? Do we actually, if I were to ask your next door neighbours, what would they say about you? And I'm sure and I hope that is good things they will say about you, because as we continue to interact in the world, we have great opportunities to speak, to show love and work. You know, there are three kinds of people that you will encounter in the world. Landscape people, machine people, and people people. Okay? Landscape people, and this is just a broad category, are the people you see walking down the street on the other side of the road. They're there, they're real people, but you don't really interact with them, do you? They're out there, they're part of the landscape, as it were. So you probably won't have much to do with the guy who's down the other end of the aisle at Coles or Woolies while you're doing your shopping. Machine people are the people that you interact with, that you get something from them. That's the checkout chick. Pardon me, I shouldn't use that. It's a very chauvinistic word. It's the checkout operator. It's the person with whom you come in connection where it's the customer service agent on the other end of the phone when you want to ring up and pay your credit card bill. It's the person with whom you interact that they are operating like a machine, that they provide something for you and you talk to them. There is the sort of place where we so often miss opportunities to be salt and light into the world, to relate and connect to them. How many of you know, apart from looking at the name badge, who the person is at your local service station who takes your money for your petrol? How many of you have asked them how their day is? How many of you have asked those little, not necessarily probing, but just taking an interest questions in a machine person, the sort of person that you run into counter with every day? These are some great opportunities for us to embrace, to interact with the rest of the world, show a bit of Christian love to people who probably, in fact, certainly, are not expecting that. What a great blessing you can be when you interact with the machine people that come into your life who would normally serve you. Then we have people people, which are the ones you see regularly, who are in a group we have a regular relationship with for more than just function, but because we are interacting regularly. Those are the people that we kind of already know we need to put in the effort to relate to them, to listen, to serve. But these little guys there, the people who we have a functional interaction with, great opportunity where we can be salt and light and love and blessing to other people. There are innumerable ways where we can use our relationship skills, our humility, our service and our love to work in both the workplace, as a slave working for other people, as a master, as an employer and a lord over others, where we can model Jesus in those areas. But also, as we interact with the community, do we work well with others? Do we play well with others? Do we interact and bless well with others? Because we are called to be amongst the world, to mix and mingle with them, and to be a peculiar people who show love and grace more and more and above what is ever expected of them.